Have you ever seen that little picture of that little kid with the spaghetti bowl dumped over his head, and he's got all the red sauce coming down his face, and his hair now looks like spaghetti coming down? Well, that's the way most of us approach our communications. We have a spaghetti of channels. We have a spaghetti of messaging we're trying to get across. We get lost in this mass of spaghetti. So now think of taking that one noodle, pursing your lips, putting it in there, and sucking it in. Right? You've got a singular narrative in this case. And that's what we all need when we're telling stories, a singular problem solution narrative.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by book number two from Dominic Dom Brightman, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success. It is the field guide to help unleash the elite performer that is inside of you. Cop it today on Amazon.com or heading over to DomBrightman.com and snag it in book, ebook, and audiobook. So that way you can take it on the go and get yourself on the go to your northbound success. And today on the Highlight Reel, Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today. That's right, indeed, another super special, awesome human, because today's guest is a bookcaster, y'all, because not only has today's guest joined the business of immortality of authorship, but they also host a podcast as well with hundreds and hundreds of great, fabulous episodes and counting. And on top of that, he is also a brand storytelling strategist, TEDx speaker, Emmy award-winning biz story coach, and he is also known as the world's most industrious storyteller, helping leaders of purpose driven brands grow by as much as 600%. So hear that right, folks. Move over 10x. We're talking 600x. Let's give it up for the powerful and humble Park Howell. How you doing today, Park?
Hey, Dom. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm doing great, man. You sound like you're doing pretty well too, huh?
Oh, yeah. Pretty well indeed. Without the extra water today. Thank God, no rain. But my goodness, so storytelling. So I guess stories, that was something you always loved since as a little younger version of Park, I imagine, right?
Well, gosh, Dom, I think we all love stories in one way, shape, or form, right? And I didn't know that I would end up doing so much consulting, teaching, coaching, and speaking on the power of story and business as what I'm doing now, but came up through the advertising world, of course, and that's where you really get to flex your storytelling muscles, providing you're really intentional about it. So, yeah, that's what I do. I just show people how to use them and the power of them when they do use them in all forms of leadership, sales and marketing, branding, that kind of thing.
That's what I'm talking about indeed. So if you were to describe your life journey in three magical words up to now, what would they be and why?
Three magical words. Well, let's start with curiosity. I've always been a very curious kid about just the way things work and how they work and so forth, especially in the creative world. As a little guy, I was playing the piano in third grade, and I was always writing these little ditties and these songs and just having fun with it. And then I wanted to understand, well, why do they work? Why this chord progression? What is it about it? And I studied music composition and theory just because I was purely curious about it. I got a degree in that, but I also figured, Dom, I probably was not going to earn a living as a composer. And so I also got a degree in journalism and communications. And really my whole career has been around advertising. I ran my own ad agency for 20 years and so forth, but I found something very interesting that while I studied music composition and theory, and that helped me a great deal in my career, especially in writing and the flow of things and taking people, you know, the highs and lows of a story, that now I teach basically storytelling, composition, and theory to show people how they can actually move the needle with their colleagues, with their customers, and with the communities they serve.
Yep, there we go. That's what I'm talking about today. So we got curiosity. Any other two words that pop in your head?
I suppose it goes back, as you mentioned, industriousness, right? One of my clients once called me the world's most industrious storyteller in helping them build their business using story. And I said, I like that. So Dom, you know what I did? I took it and I use that as my moniker. But, you know, it's like anything. Like, you've had your podcast here for what, 7 years now? You're an industrious podcaster and you do it. I just do one show a week and I've been doing it for 8 years, but that's just one show every Monday for 8 years. You are cranking out three shows a week. So you know what I'm talking about when it comes down to industriousness, really finding something you love. And the beautiful thing about being a host is you get to use your curiosity in talking to guests, to basically strangers, to really understand what drives them. So I suppose on top of curiosity, I would say industriousness.
There we go. It's right indeed. It's right indeed. And I'm guessing like we'll make a CIA. I guess the third one would be action because you took a lot of action too.
Took a lot of action, but I think we all naturally do this. My third one is such a good question you asked. I would say probably relates to my personal archetype. And that archetype is what's known as the fool, believe it or not. And it's not hopefully the dumb fool, the goofy fool, the fool everybody makes fun of, but it's the court jester, that person within the court that can go in and call BS on the king and the queen and say, wait a minute, I know you're saying this, but here's what the people really think about what's going on. And so they can have fun at their expense, you know, to help them to demonstrate, you know, here's the proper way forward from how, as I understand it, from the plebs out there, the populace out there. So I'm going to say the fool. I'm a curious, industrious fool. Dom, how about that?
I actually kind of like the fact you brought the court just because it's so true. It's like, hey, it's even like comedians to this day, it's where it's like, oh yeah, a lot of the truth is hidden behind the humor. It's like the sugar before the medicine to make it go down easier.
Isn't that the truth? I always say that storytelling helps the medicine go down, or more importantly, storytelling helps the data go down, you know, because people in communications world, especially like business to business marketing, whatever, they always lead with logic and reason. When in my experience, it's actually emotional story that places the context around that logic and reason that we should all start with. Sell to the heart and the head's going to follow.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about. Indeed. So my goodness. So when it comes to storytelling, you had so much success. You finally joined the business of immortality and published your first book. So how does it feel, my man, if I'm not mistaken, Brand Bewitchery?
Yep. Brand Bewitchery. Boy, you know, Dom, it took me about 8 years to write that doggone book. I wrote it and rewrote it and rewrote it. And it's all about my journey and travels in storytelling, about creating brand narrative strategy for lots of different companies. And I published it right in the middle, right smack dab in the middle of COVID. June 1st, 2021, I finally got it out and shared it with the world. And have since written two other books. One I co-authored with Dr. Randy Olson called The Narrative Gym for Business, which is a much shorter book that talks about this and but therefore framework that we teach. And then one that I'm just about ready to put out in the world. It's called How to Activate Your Storytelling Flywheel to Build Momentum for Your Revenue Generation.
Oh, wow. Sweet. Timetable on when we can expect the Flywheel book to come out?
Probably, well, later 2024. I'm going through the work of getting that written in and testing some of the hypothesis on it. Well, I've already used it in other areas, so I'm still, it probably is going to be late third quarter, early fourth quarter, I'm guessing, of 2024. So I still got a ways to go on it, but it is fun to write it in the process, you know?
As I'm talking about days, I'm talking about date. So before the flywheels appear, you had the wonderful cauldron going on with the bee. Witchery with the double toil and success instead of trouble.
Well, you know how stories have a way of bewitching people, right? I used to do a lot of work with the Air Force out in your neck of the woods. I would go out to Andrews Air Force Base twice a year, and I would work with their brigadier to four-star generals and their staff and teaching them how to use storytelling, you know, to communicate and connect with their airmen and women and keep them around so they're not losing them to airlines and other opportunities out there. And one day I had one of the generals wrote a critique of my presentation, and she said that I was enchanting. And I love that. And I don't think that I'm particularly enchanting, but I think the concept and the theory around stories and the way they work on us has that impact on people. And that's where the brand Bewitchery came in. I talk about the applied science and Bewitchery of storytelling. The applied science are the three story structures that we teach, or you could even call them story algorithms, if you will. And if you use these structures, from very simple little messages to very simple little short anecdotal stories to even long form communications, you can have then that Bewitchery. You can really move that audience through emotion. And so I call it the applied science and Bewitchery of storytelling. Hence, that's what led to my book, Brand Bewitchery. How do you connect with that audience on such a deep level that you can't help but move them to action?
Ah, that's what I'm talking about. So you mentioned the three, mind sharing the triangle with us.
Now, how do you use story, Dom? I mean, you've obviously a character. You've been producing your podcast for a long time. You are obviously a natural storyteller. Are you ever intentional about stories and the stories you tell and what you're trying to evoke in your listeners and even in your guests?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely as a podcast host, when really just calling back past episodes as a way to market and push folks to past episodes. And as a speaker and a leadership trainer, definitely the power of stories always welcome. Heck, even when it comes to my day job at a local library, when occasionally training new staff, like adding new stories, and folks may be like, okay, so why don't we do this? It's like, well, we don't want folks to come back mad at us because we didn't inform them about the late fees long ago when we used to charge late fees for things. So,
right.
Yeah. Definitely. So, yeah, probably in those three magical areas, usually with work. Heck, even actually, not as a fourth area, occasionally with friends too. A conversation, like just going through random stories, just cracking on each other every now and then too. So yeah, so probably those four areas now to think about it. So yeah,
you know, it's funny, when I am working with folks and teaching them about story, one of the points I like to make is we as Homo sapiens, we are simply storytelling monkeys. I mean, it's really what separates us from a lot of most other organisms out there, is that we think, plan, organize, and act using stories to get people bought into what we're trying to do and showing them the way forward. Then, of course, it's our job as a storyteller to deliver on all those promises that we make in our stories to them, especially in sales and marketing. If you buy into this, here's the fictional, you know, outcome that's going to happen. And our job is to turn that fiction into fact so that then they start telling our stories and sharing our stories with their world. And one of the best ways I've learned, you know, storytelling can get really complicated if you're following the 17-step hero's journey or the 15 beats to a story, as Blake Snyder outlined in his fabulous book called Save the Cat. You know, even Pixar's 8-step story way, it can get really, really complicated. And I have learned in all my travels from a good friend of mine, Dr. Randy Olson, about the and, but, therefore, this three-word story structure that we have found. We now call it the DNA of story, because once we communicators get this ABT down, the and, but, therefore, then it becomes this, we build this narrative intuition. So our stories get much, much stronger, you know, in the process. And I would love to bounce it off of you and see and show it to you in action if you're game. I'll put you on the hot seat. How's that sound?
Sounds good. It makes you look even better and not butter.
So here's what the and, but, therefore, I'll give you a little quick little background on it. The and, but, therefore, the ABT works because it uses the three forces of story that are primal decision-making, pattern-seeking, problem-solving, buying limbic brain loves. That limbic brain is operating in the background. It is our subconscious. It's a, you know, part of the emotional center of what we bring in. And so and is the setup, the statement of agreement, that shared vision of what we all would like to have happen. Act one, if you will. The but is the plot twist. The but is, but we don't currently have what we want because of this problem. And then the therefore is picture it. That's act three. Picture if you get this, when you get this, when you do this with us. So you can, you know, take them on that mission. So let's show, you know, let your listeners demonstrate how this works. Let's use it for your show. All right. Are you game, Don? And I'm going to walk you through it.
Sounds good. I'm game.
Here we go. Tell me, Dom, who is your number one audience? Who do you appeal to that's right at the top of the food chain of all your listeners?
Wow, top of the food chain. Definitely the folks that I really appeal to the most are definitely millennials, especially the older millennials in their 30s, definitely.
And what is it? Let's get even more specific. What is it? Let's. What kind of millennial? And they're older, you said, in their 30s. What is it about? There's a lot of millennials of that age, right? But what's your core market within that millennial group?
My core market in that millennial group is definitely aspiring authors and especially aspiring entrepreneurs and folks looking to really take their stories and really take their dreams of writing a book and making it a reality.
Okay, awesome. So you would start off with the you pronoun. You want to be speaking directly to your audience. You know, as an aspiring millennial author, what do they want relative to your show that they don't even realize yet? Go ahead and map it out. Like, what is it they want and why is that important to them? How would you answer that?
What they want is really a fulfilled dream. They want to be on that other side, that pot of gold, if you will, of really that accomplishment and really that advancement to their next level in life. That's really what they want at the end of the day.
Of writing that book, and that's going to help them give that platform to move on. And let me ask you this, and why is that important to them?
And that's important to them because it's really all about fulfillment. And really just having that sense of accomplishment.
Okay. So our statement of agreement identifies our number one audience, and this is your number one audience in this case. You know, as an aspiring millennial author, you want to publish that first book. And if you can, and when you do it, you will achieve that fulfillment in your career that you long for. Fair enough?
Oh, beautiful.
So that's our statement of agreement. That's getting your audience to nod, yes, that's right. That's what I'm about. Okay, now let's introduce the statement of contradiction, the problem, why they don't currently have it. So I'm going to ask you first, I'm going to ask you two questions that will help us fill in the statement of contradiction. What is the emotion they are currently feeling right now because they haven't written their book? Is it frustration, fatigue, exhaustion? They just don't know where to turn, confusion. What would you say is their number one emotion, Dom?
You picked the first word out of my head. Definitely frustration. That's definitely.
Okay. The main and one. And then why are they frustrated? What's causing that frustration?
Well, I guess kind of like with a lot of stories, they hit those roadblocks of life where they have to take care of a parent, or they may be starting a new job after hopping away from another one. And just really just a lot of life changes. Heck, even a lot of folks may not even have the financial means to really focus on book writing. They're focusing on just living and at least staying alive.
Okay. So let's start filling in the blocks here. You are an aspiring millennial author. And if you could just write that book that you dream about, then you will experience the fulfillment in your career and life that you seek. But you're frustrated because life is getting in the way of writing your book. therefore. Let's also load up an emotion right after therefore. Therefore, what are they going to feel like when they write that book?
Yeah, therefore, they're going to feel happy. They're going to feel accomplished. And heck, they're going to even feel confident because that's definitely a huge milestone to write a book.
And it's then at the end of that therefore statement that you introduce your brand and your offering. So what is it about your show that enables them to do that?
Ah.
Why should they be tuning in?
Wow, that is freaking amazing. Now I'm seeing how this is all coming together real time. Oh my goodness, this is freaking great.
Yep. So what is that answer, Dom? What's that one thing that you deliver them three times a week that they can go to that's going to help them write that book?
Yeah. Really, it's inspiration now to think about it.
Inspiration?
Definitely inspiration, because the thing is a lot of different generations have appeared on the show from 14 all the way to 80.
Yeah. So inspiration. So therefore, imagine how happy you are going to be when you finally get to publish this book after listening to your show that introduces them to inspiring authors who have been through the struggle and will teach you ways to do it easier and faster than what you're currently experiencing. I'm just kind of winging this right now, but let's take the whole thing together. Here is the quick little brand narrative strategy for your show, Dom. Something to the effect of, all right, you're going to introduce your number one audience. You are an aspiring millennial author. And if you could just publish that book of yours, then you will experience the exhilaration and fulfillment in your career as being a published author. But you're currently frustrated because life is getting in the way and you simply don't feel like you have the time, energy, and or money to accomplish your dream. Therefore, picture that day when you publish your book after listening to the hundreds of different inspiring authors we have right here on my show that will demonstrate the easiest, fastest way for you to put your words into the world. Setup, problem, resolution. The three forces of story. Agreement, here's what you want. Contradiction, but here's the problem that you must overcome. Therefore, here's the way forward. In this case, with my show. Now, what you've done is you are speaking again to that primal pattern-seeking, problem-solving, decision-making, limbic buying brain, and you are hand-delivering an important message to it using the structure of story to do that. Setup, problem, resolution. Isn't that cool? Isn't that the greatest? I mean, to me, it's one of the most fabulous tools I've ever come across. And I learned about it from my friend, Dr. Randy Olson, back in 2013. Dr. Olson is a Harvard PhD evolutionary biologist. He gives up tenure in his mid-30s. He goes to USC Film School. He graduates. He produces three documentaries on climate change and global warming. But the bulk of his work has been teaching scientists and academia how to take their complex messages and make them clear, concise, and simple for people to understand by simply using this and but therefore framework. And when I read about it in his first book called Connection, from a branding standpoint, I looked at this and I'm going, wow, is this like the holy grail of branding? Because in the branding world, we're always trying to make a complex message as simple and compelling as possible to get people to buy into it. And when I started studying it, and I didn't know Randy at this time, but I got to know him and we have become fast friends ever since. And while he's teaching it in the science world, I've translated it over to the business world. And in all of the courses that I teach, the mastery courses I do both online and in person, we always begin with the and, but, and therefore, because as I told Randy, I view the ABT as the DNA of story. And he's like, dude, I'm the PhD here. I should have come up with that you know, moniker for it. And I go, dude, I'm the brander here. That's what I do for a living. How do you make this message land right the first time in people's mind? And so you just, thank you, Dom, for going through that exercise with me. But that was a great way to, you know, to demonstrate how the and but therefore works.
Ah, there you go. You're hearing a master at work, y'all. That's right indeed. Hearing a master at work. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. It's like you're going to be leaving with the sharpest sword in the wonderful blacksmith home today, y'all. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. It's Excalibur, darn it.
Well, I cover the ABT a lot in my Brand Bewitchery book and the two other frameworks that I teach. There's the five primal elements of a short story, which is essentially an anecdote that makes your business point for you. And then the 10-step story cycle system is where all of my learning and training around storytelling, around remember story composition and theory came to. You know, Dom, I was running my ad agency in Phoenix, Arizona, started in 1995. In the first 10 years, I loved it. We did traditional advertising, TV, radio, print, outdoor, direct mail, whatever. And then, of course, the interweb came around, as did social media. And I like to say that our clients used to own the influence of mass media, but now the masses have become the media. They own your story. They own my story. And oh, by the way, it is so incredibly noisy out there. It's really hard to get that story heard. So I went in search for an answer. And I was lucky because our son Parker was going to film school at Chapman University at about that time, 2006 to 2010. And Dom, I told Parker, I said, send me your books and your recorded lectures when you're done with them, since, well, I'm paying for them, because I want to know, what does Hollywood know and how do they teach storytelling so that you could be successful in the most competitive storytelling market in the world? Of course, that's Hollywood. And that's when I found The Hero's Journey, Joseph Campbell. And when I first saw it, it hit me over the head immediately. I go, this is a beautiful business communications structure that we could use throughout business. But why have we never been taught this? How come MBA programs don't teach it? How come advertising marketing folks don't ever learn this? And that's when I mapped it to business. And I called it my 10-step story cycle system. That is what Brand Bewitchery is about. But in it, as I was writing the book, I learned about the and but therefore, and I learned about these five primal elements of a short story. And so now I teach these three frameworks, the three-word ABT, the five primal elements of a short story for big impact, and the 10-step story cycle system that you use for long-form communications, blog posts, videos, and it is particularly powerful on sales presentations.
Yes, indeed. That's what I'm talking about. Indeed, powerful. Indeed. And it's really a shame that sometimes it's like, man, you got to go outside of the traditional schooling, especially depending on your really your realm of study that you choose, like whatever made you choose to really get that next level. Because like what you mentioned earlier, like the MBAs, like, why aren't they really learning this powerful art of next level storytelling? Really is what it is. It's like storytelling is like the, you get the bland vanilla sweet ice cream, but it's like you're getting the chocolate strawberry vanilla, you're like getting the rocky road here. Like you're getting like the different flavors here with the ABT method. So my goodness, so with all those frameworks that you're able to put together and with that book taking 8 years, what was probably the butt of the whole situation in a way to play off the B? Like what was probably the main thing you had to conquer to finally get to the other side and hit that publish button for Brand Bewitchery?
You know what it was, Dom? I took a page out of Jerry Seinfeld's book. And what he said he would do to keep himself writing is he had a big poster calendar up on his wall. And he promised himself that he would write for 1 hour every day. And he would get up there. And every day he did it, he'd put a big X on that calendar. And X, 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 and then, you know, he might get busy. Maybe he's flying or whatever, and he might miss a Thursday. Well, the Thursday doesn't get an X. Friday gets an X. Saturday gets an X. Sunday doesn't get an X. And he said that had always helped him to continue to practice his craft. And sometimes you'd sit down and you'd write for 2, 3, or 4 hours. But he said, as long as you put in 1 hour a day. So what I did is I was having the same challenge as your listeners. I was running an ad agency. I was also teaching at Arizona State University, my craft around storytelling. I was doing a lot of traveling and I was extraordinarily busy, and I would get to it and then I'd put it off to the side. Then I'd get to it and I'd put it off to the side, and I realized I wasn't gaining enough ground. So in October of 2019, I pulled out my, I went down to like Office Max, bought one of those big calendars, put it up in my wall, and I said to myself, I made a promise, I'm going to write 1 hour every morning before I go to work, before I do anything else. I'd get up, I'd grab my cup of coffee, pet my dog, and then I would sit down and I would write. Sometimes it would be 1 hour, sometimes it'd be 2 to 3 hours. Sometimes it wouldn't be any hours. I would miss some, I would get busy. But just simply by seeing that check mark day after day after day, your brain gets trained to saying, hey, man, I don't want to let you down, dude. Let's sit down and write. You know, and then when you miss a couple of days, you feel bad. You're like, oh, I got to get back at it. But when you start lining up X's all the way across, and you don't even have to do it on weekends. Quite often I didn't tell myself I had to write on weekends. So when I did, I would put an X in there and it'd be an attaboy for me. But you find that you build this momentum. And because of that one exercise, I learned that that was the best, fastest, most accountable way that I could get my book done. I highly credit Jerry Seinfeld for the idea. And for any of your listeners out there who is having a hard time finding the time, because as we identified, they are aspiring millennials that want to write a book. And if they do, they'll have this incredible fulfillment, but they're frustrated because life is getting in the way. Therefore, imagine you publishing your book and looking back at your calendar that has X, 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 X. Each one of those X's basically are an attaboy, an attagirl for putting in the time and effort you got to do in order to get that book done.
Woohoo! X's and O's. More X's instead of O's in this case. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. If you're one of those players, you can see him as ex-girlfriends. 365.
Well, they're not an ex-girlfriend if you give them the XOXOXO. It's only when you leave out one of those X's or O's that they become the ex-girlfriend.
Well played indeed. You'll love to see it. So my goodness, so since you've been on so many interviews, especially on the guest side of the game on these podcasts, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often?
That's a good question. You know, sometimes what I hear, people are always think this, but they don't always ask it. Let's go back to the and but therefore for a second. They will say, Park, it's too simple. It can't possibly work. So the question I love asked is like, from you, Dom, Park, it just seems too simple. It can't possibly work. And a case in point, I was working with a large veterinarian association. We're talking Animal Veterinarian Association last year. And I was working with their marketing team in a virtual session. And we were doing three of these sessions, and we were in session number two. I'd already taught them about the and but therefore and asked them to apply them in their jobs. The second, you know, session would be, let's read through them and let's work them together and, you know, really frame them and dial them in. And they had one of their young writers, we'll call her Sarah. Sarah, about 10 minutes into that session, kind of stopped me. She was a little bit abrasive, and she said, you know, Park, I'm a journalism major and I've been writing here for 6 years. And I guess I can see how the ABT might work, but it feels too stilted to me. So I'm not going to use it. I'm going to just keep doing what I've always done. And I started laughing and I looked at her face and she was looking at me like, why are you laughing? And I looked at everybody in the Zoom session and they said, why is this guy laughing? And I realized they didn't hear the fact that Sarah used an ABT to tell me why she wouldn't use an ABT. And when I brought it to her attention, she laughed and everybody laughed. And she's like, oh my God, you're right. And I said, Sarah, you see, this is a built-in template. This is not something I invented. It's not something Dr. Randy Olson invented. In fact, it's been around since the beginning of time. And give you an example of that, Dom, because when I first saw it, I thought, could it really be that effective? I mean, I felt like it could, but I went back in time and I thought, where else have we seen the ambut therefore? Well, you think about it, almost every nursery rhyme that you cannot forget that is like memorialized in your brain is the perfect ABT. For instance, Little Miss Muffet sat on her tuffet, eating her curds and whey. Along came a spider who sat down beside her and frightened Miss Muffet away. So when you hear that, you go, okay, I know that, but Park, I don't hear an and, but, or therefore anywhere in there. Ah, but it's all implied. The story structure is there. Little Miss Muffet sat on her tuffet and she was eating her curds and whey. That's act one. We're setting the scene. Here comes the conflict or the contradiction. But along came a spider who sat down beside her, which that contradiction triggers that limbic problem solution, limbic brain. It's like, what happened? We've opened a story loop. You invited me into it. You've thrown me a curveball with the but along came a spider who sat down beside her. Now this problem solution brain is saying, what happened next? Therefore, frighten Little Miss Muffet away. So you find the ABT if you look. What's one of your favorite nursery rhymes? Do you have one that popped to mind when I brought that up?
I feel like Hickory Dickory Dock popped into my mind.
Hickory Dickory Dock, yeah. A mouse ran up the clock. Then what happened? The clock struck one, the mouse went down, Hickory Dickory Dock. So you could, that's not quite as solid as an ABT, but you could say, Hickory Dickory Dock and a mouse went up the clock, but the clock struck one, the mouse went down, therefore Hickory Dickory Dock, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. So that's not quite as strong, but say like Jack and Jill went up the hill and they were fetching a pail of water, but Jack fell down and broke his crown, therefore Jill came tumbling after. There's another example of it. By the way, Chivas Regal produced a great print ad in the late 1980s playing off of that theme. It said, Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown royal. And now Jill's dating some guy from LA. It wasn't Chivas, it was Crown Royal. Yeah. So there you go. You find the ABT everywhere. And it's just a great way to cement. You know, I start with in Brand Bewitchery, I share people with the ABT right up top because I'm going to demonstrate to them how it plays out in a very meta fashion throughout all of messaging and storytelling from the very long form stuff right down to something as simple as a nursery rhyme and how people can use it in everything from their social media posts to their email writing to all their long form content to their landing pages to actually creating the brand narrative structure for a fabulous podcast like yours, Dom.
Heck yeah, indeed. Heck yeah, indeed. That's right, indeed. Hashtag master at work. That's probably the theme of this episode because my man Park has been dropping some gems, y'all. It's right, indeed. It's like you got a tennis bracelet of wisdom, y'all. It's right, indeed. My man's like a jewelry store manager. With all the jewelry, he's dropping the storytelling. So, fun question for you. So, if your fabulous book, Brand Bewitchery, if that book were a food, what would it be and why?
Spaghetti. Because spaghetti's my absolute favorite food of all time. And here's the thing. Have you ever seen that picture of that little kid with the spaghetti bowl dumped over his head and he's got all the red sauce coming down his face and his hair now looks like spaghetti coming down? Well, that's the way most of us approach our communications. We have a spaghetti of channels. We have a spaghetti of messaging we're trying to get across. We get lost in this mass of spaghetti. So now think of taking that one noodle, pursing your lips, putting it in there, and sucking it in, right? You've got a singular narrative in this case, and that's what we all need when we're telling stories, a singular problem-solution narrative. In that case, that metaphor of sucking in that spaghetti that one strand of spaghetti is that one story that you are trying to enjoy and share with the world. And then you pull up the next strand and you pull it in, and then the next strand. And so my job, I guess, is taking that mess, that spaghetti of messaging, and making it a delicious, simple meal that everybody is going to enjoy. So brand bewitchery, I guess, would be the spaghetti and sauce of delicious storytelling.
Yeah, that's right, dude. That's probably the best answer to that. It's best response to that question, while Woody Bitch. Is that off the top of my head, I can't think of the last person to mention spaghetti, if they even did. And if they did, it was as good as that one.
I love spaghetti. I'm up here in the Pacific Northwest right now visiting our 98-year-old mother, who is still living in the same 12-acre home that she and my dad raised us 12 kids on. And we didn't have a lot of money growing up, and so steak was a rare commodity at the dinner table. But whenever any one of us seven kids' birthdays came up, we always got to choose what meal we wanted. And almost everybody always chose steak. But when it came up to mine, I'm on Valentine's Day, by the way, is my birthday. And now that you know, Dom, I expect to see a card, hopefully, from you here in a couple weeks. No, I'm just kidding you there. But I would always ask for my mom's spaghetti. And my siblings would always say, Park, what in the hell are you doing? Steak! We need steak! Get me steak! And I'm going, nope. I will take spaghetti over steak any day of the week, especially my mother's spaghetti. It was just always lovely.
I bet your parents were happy when your birthday came around, too.
Oh, yeah. A lot cheaper than those steaks feeding seven kids.
They're like, yes, we know who the favorite is. We can't tell the other kids, but Park knows who the favorite is.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
Well, fun question for you, since you're a fellow podcast host, with those obligatory questions. So since you got this wonderful podcast, the top 1% of the world, the wonderful podcast show, The Business of Story, what would you consider your top three major lessons learned from starting, growing, and running your magical show?
The top three. Number one, don't get too caught up if you're trying to start a show or whatever of making it perfect at the beginning. Just get it out there. Interview people. Throw it up there. Throw it out there. Don't throw it up. Throw it out there. And learn as you go. Have some fun with it. Because as you know, Dom, you want to get the content out there. So you don't got to be perfect. Don't worry about perfection. Number two, be open to finding your voice. Give it time. And once you get your voice down, you're going to see that the format of your show is going to change a little bit. You're going to have much more fun with it. And then number three, I would say, don't get discouraged. Even 8 years in, Dom, sometimes I'm like, man, I'm going on almost 500 episodes. And I'm like, I don't know. Do I really want to keep doing this? Is anybody even listening? Because that's the thing, is you don't always hear from your listeners. And whenever I get that inkling of like maybe giving up or saying, I don't know if this is really worth it to do this anymore, someone invariably will send me an email, an instant message on Instagram or LinkedIn, and they will call out a particular show and the impact it had on them. And so I like to then times that by 20,000 and say, okay, one of 20,000 people listening to this actually reached out. I'm hoping I'm having that kind of impact, and I'm probably having a much bigger impact on people than I realize. They're just not raising their hand and letting you know. So, you know, I think that's true with the book too, for your millennial aspiring authors out there. As you get it out there, you know, books are awfully hard to make a big living off of, but use them as a platform, use them as a calling card to share your wisdom with the world. And then don't worry about the analytics of it. Don't worry if you're not getting filthy rich, because most of us don't. I certainly have not. But I use it to help train people. And the wealth to me that comes in is that impact I can have on the globe by people picking up Brand Bewitchery and reading it. And I have no idea they're actually doing that until one day someone sends me a note and I said, you know, I need to keep doing this.
Heck yeah, that's right, dude. Inspirational Dick is so right. So that's right, folks. If you're listening right now, don't be shy. Send Park a message.
Yeah,
feel free. Know, hey.
Come on over to LinkedIn and connect with me there and shoot me a note and listen to my show. It's called The Business of Story. And unlike Dom, who's killing it with three shows a week, I just have one. And I bring you a new story artist every Monday. I'm going to teach you about how to use storytelling in all walks of life.
Heck yeah, indeed. Heck, now to think about it, I should probably put in the show notes the 10 storytelling tips that will ignite your sales. Because when you inserted those ads from your past life in your agency where you're doing a lot more advertising, it was freaking hilarious. Even my brother was laughing at some of the wonderful ads that you played back.
Oh, are you talking about the radio commercials?
Yeah, yeah.
I had
especially
so
one
much
with the pianos.
You know, Dom, that was several decades ago when I was first starting my career as a writer. And I was lucky. I was working for a small ad agency in Phoenix, Arizona. And we ended up doing a lot of radio commercials. And my boss at the time, Sandy Peterson, just turned me loose. And I could do whatever I wanted. And I wrote a lot of stories. I mean, every one of those commercials is a story in and of itself. But that was before I had studied storytelling. I didn't even really know what I was doing it. I was winging it. I was working off of my intuition and not even thinking about story, just knowing I wanted to tell one. And it wasn't until I started really learning story structure that I realized, oh, we could become intentional about telling stories using these structures and have way more impact in the world than when we're just winging storytelling. So I like to say, learn storytelling structures that so that you can evolve from winging it to winning with it every single time you share a story. And I'm so happy that you enjoyed those radio commercials because some of them are pretty goofy, but we had a lot of fun producing them.
Heck yeah, indeed. Heck yeah, indeed. I'm like, yep. I'm like, I'll need to listen to some of my man's past concerts. Like, I always got a show till I look this up, and that was one that popped up on Listen Notes. I'm like, oh, yep. This is freaking great. This is freaking great indeed.
Thank you.
No sweating days. So, my goodness, we're coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive, and that is if you were to wake up tomorrow and you were 25 again, but you're still in the current year, what advice would you give to yourself?
My 25-year-old self, huh? I would say, don't always follow the rules. Learn your craft well, and then go and start tweaking things. So spend that time of really learning your craft, and then open up to how are you going to take what seems obvious and make it novel? How are you going to take something that seems familiar and make it novel? That was one of the best lessons I ever learned. It was from a gentleman by the name of Derek Thompson, who writes for The Atlantic. And he wrote a fantastic book that talked about that very, that's the premise. How do you take something familiar so that your audience is involved? They get it, but then you put a twist on it. You make it novel in your own way. So if I went back to myself, I would look around. And my 25-year-old self, I'd probably have been working at an ad agency at that time. And I'd say, okay, here's what everybody else is doing. I get it. How can I put a spin on it? How can I make it surprising? How can I really light up that limbic brain? And then I would certainly give a lot more credence to story composition and theory, these structures, the and but therefore, the five primal elements of a short story, and even the 10-step story cycle system. And I would apply them throughout everything that I did. I often tell people, even though I learned the ABTs 13 years ago, I wished I had learned it in the third grade because it is just that powerful.
So I'm talking about another mighty emerald from the wonderful Jim K. Shaw's, right? Indeed. Indeed, I could take the ordinary, make a novel, y'all. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. He's a punster. He didn't even know it.
Oh, I love puns, Don. I love them. People just roll my eyes. I've got friends that call me the Colonel of Corn because they like my puns. Or they don't like my puns. They like to give me crap about them, but they're fun.
Puns stay on the bun. So what's your favorite pun to tell, folks?
Gosh, it just depends. It's whatever pun pops up in the moment, I think. If that makes sense. It's whatever happens to pop up and you go, ooh, nailed it. I don't know that I've got a single go-to pun, man. I think that would kill the punniness of it.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one. I'm in the same boat with you because sometimes folks pop that on me. It's like, what's your favorite puns? It's like, oh, darn. It's like, yep, I got one, but it ain't always kid friendly either. So it's like, let me not tell.
I suppose that, you know, the puns always walk that fine line of being bad dad jokes. So you gotta make sure you use them and deliver them just right.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Take some good old polishing, some sharpening, indeed. A little molding.
Yeah.
That's right, indeed. Maybe some crown molding.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of crown molding, my man's got a crown of content, and the crown is the size of China and Texas combined, and my man probably only shared, I don't know, maybe 5% of what he has to offer. So for those who need to dive into the other 95% of what you have to offer, park and cop some copies of your magical books, what's the best way for folks to do so?
Oh, you know what? Come on over and follow me on LinkedIn and or Instagram. And I've got this great last name of Park Howell. It's great because it's weird enough that not anybody else has it. So I'm easy to find. LinkedIn.com/Park Howell. Instagram.com/Park Howell. Come on over there and follow me. And by all means, I hope you'll tune into my show. Every Monday, I've got a new story artist on there, and I cover everything from branding and marketing to authors, the ton of authors on there, to this week I've got on there a guy in the franchise world and how he used storytelling to help brand a franchise that they built, and then how he's using it in his new model, excuse me, called Epic Managers, and what he learned when we took him through the branding concept with his current meditation franchise. He grew as a storyteller, and he goes, that's the reason why I named it Epic Managers, because I want to put the manager at the center of the story and help them build epic careers in the franchise world. So I got off on a little tangent there, but that's one of the great ways for your people to learn more about business and brand storytelling is follow my show, The Business of Story. It's on iTunes and all the places you find podcasts.
Woo, that's what I'm talking about indeed. So there you have it, folks. Follow my man, Park Howell, the mighty PH. That's right indeed. The PH without the D. That's right indeed.
You know, Domin, if your listeners want to learn how to use the and but therefore, I've got a micro course on it. It's under an hour long, and it takes them through three stages of building the and but therefore. And they can find that at businessofstory.com/ABT. businessofstory.com/ABT.
Woohoo! And that's what it's all about, y'all. Instead of the hokey pokey, it's the howl parky.
There you go. Oh, you're a punster yourself, huh?
Yes, indeed. Some
you're
folks call me the
dom.
Pun. Heck yeah, that's right indeed. So many puns coming at folks. They sometimes jokingly call me the punisher.
Well, keep going with them. The world can't have enough puns.
Oh, you're my kind of people.
Be pundundant. Don't get me started, man. You're going to be in trouble. We'll be here all night.
Pundundant. I knew you were a jewelry store manager. Another gem pops out.
There you go.
Well, before Camel Hump Pun comes out of nowhere, any parting words before we close up Shop Park?
Gosh, you know what I like to share with people is as you grow as a more persuasive and influential storyteller, just remember this one thing, Dom, and that is the most potent story you will ever tell is the story you tell yourself. So make sure that one's epic.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network, bonus points for three. And be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.